This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. In this podcast, I'll be interrogating sexual myths, posing sex questions to special guests, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. In order to do this, though, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Hello, and welcome to The Real Sex Education. I'm Diggory Waite, and I'm joined, as ever, by accredited sex and relationship therapist Kate Campbell. Hello, mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Today is a very special day indeed because we're joined by comedian, actor and fellow podcaster, Mary
wow.
Beth Barone. I knew you'd love that.
You slipped that in. I am a podcaster. Sometimes I'm a self-hating podcaster, but I do think podcasts are ultimately good for society. Some of them.
Oh, wow. Some of them. Really. Where would this one rank? Are you going to hold judgment or?
No, I mean, I think education, well, knowledge is power. So for me, it's like if you're coming at things from a place of positivity and trying to share information that is real, I'm on board.
And this is real. This is
fantastic.
So real. And it's a real pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much. I mean, it's been so long since we've had a guest like yourself. Well, you're the first and the only Mary Beth Barone. But we used to ask our guests a simple question. What was their sex education like? Just to get to know you. So what was your sex education like?
Funny that you ask, because I just recently talked about this a little bit on my podcast. So I went to Catholic school for 14 years. And at Catholic school, the sex education is mostly just saying don't have sex until you're married. And if you have sex when you're married, it should be with the intention of creating human life. So it was pretty extreme. Like every year we would have a sex talk, which was just more about like puberty and like reproductive organs. And my parents, my dad's a doctor and my mom's a nurse, so they would actually give that talk. And that upset a lot of the people at my school, namely the parents. One of them called the Vatican and told them that my parents were doing the devil's work.
Oh, no.
Wow. Cool. Wait, so. How does one get a direct line to the Vatican as well?
I don't
That's
know.
Also an amazing part of that story.
Catholic people in Greenwich, Connecticut, I don't know. They have friends in high places. But it was, you know, it was a little awkward, but it was not anything for me that felt like too crazy. I mean, it wasn't graphic in detail, but then in high school, cause I went to public high school, it was a little bit more informational, but still, I mean, sex education in America, I don't know if it's worse or comparable to the UK, but they don't teach you very much. Nothing useful anyway. They teach you how to put a condom on a banana. If you've seen that in TV shows about American high school, that's definitely, that happened. Mm. And my health teacher, bless her, I loved her, but we definitely had some major gaps.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel bad. If you'd seen our show the other week, I also put a condom on a banana to show that. So maybe we're no better than the Americans in their sex education.
It's a start. It shouldn't be the full curriculum, but a great place to start.
Exactly. People would have seen the title of this episode and they'll want us to talk about the actual subject. So I should ask you two things. What is a fuckboy? Mm-hmm. And I guess to tie it into your story, what was your first interaction with one?
So, a fuckboy, this is a question I get all the time. And as the foremost thought leader and scholar on fuckboys, I can define it. So, a fuckboy is a gender-neutral term. It can be a girl, a guy, a non-binary person. Basically, someone who will do and say anything to have sex with a person. And then after that, there's no accountability for their actions. There's no follow-through. There's no sort of respect, like mutual respect between the two people, driven by that person. So it's definitely like one of the pitfalls of modern dating culture, in my opinion, because we have so much access to people just like on any of these dating apps or going out. You know, everyone's really horny, I feel like, especially after the pandemic. So there's just a lot of opportunity to treat people poorly. And my first experience, I mean, fuckboys have been around forever. There's like, there's Jesus was the original, as many have said before me. But it goes way, way back, you know.
Wait, unpack that one. How is he the original fuckboy?
Well, he was kind of like a little bit full of, you know, son of God, that whole thing. And yeah, then he, I mean, I like that he dated a sex worker. I think that's really cool, according to legend. But then he like, he died. He like ghosted for 3 days and then was like, just kidding, I'm alive, which that's like gaslighting in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of history with fuckboys, but there wasn't that word for it when I was in high school, but it's always been a presence in my life. And then I think as I got older and started having more sexual experiences, I mean, I remember the first person that ever ghosted me. That was really confusing. I was coming out of a relationship, so I didn't know that that was a thing. And yeah, I mean, high school, college, living in New York City, being a comedian, hooking up with comedians, there's just fuckboys in all walks of life.
Yeah. Wow. And so at this point, how do we identify a fuckboy?
It's one of the greatest challenges that we face, because a lot of times fuckboys are either self-aware and they don't want to acknowledge it. And so they'll just like do their whole spiel and then you have sex with them and then it turns out they're a fuckboy. Or they're aware of it and they just deny it. But I've always said I've developed a foolproof test. It's the fuckboy test. Mm. If you think someone's a fuckboy and if they're exhibiting the behaviors and you want to know for sure, you just have sex with them. And then you get the results within about 3 to 5 days. And if you don't hear anything, it's positive.
That's brilliant. You said that they'll use any excuse to get you into bed. So what's the weirdest excuse or weirdest way someone's tried to seduce you?
Gosh, it's like a lot of it's a blur now, to be honest with you. I've been fuckboy free for like now at this point, thousands of days. I do keep track.
Well done.
I don't know the exact, whatever, January 7th, 2020 was the last interaction. But so it's been a really long time. But in my work with fuckboys, like they will just straight up lie about their jobs, their name, where they're from. They will do fake accents. They will take you back to an apartment where, you know, they don't actually live. It's like a friend's place, but they're playing it off. You know, it's just like, it's just very strange the lengths that they'll go to. Or they will straight up tell you, like, I'm not a fuckboy. Like there were a few people when I was trying to like recover from my addiction to fuckboys where I was like, I'm not having one night stands. So if you want to have a one night stand, I don't want to hook up with you. We can just end it here. And then they'd be like, no, I want to. And then you have sex. And then guess what? It's a one night stand. Mm. So it's really classic stuff, just straight up lying. I'm sure there's been fabrications that I don't even know about. Also, it's interesting because you can find out stuff about people online. So lying in 2023, I wouldn't want to be caught in a lie. I mean, I hate lying in general, but I would be embarrassed if I was caught in a lie. So these people don't have, I don't think they have the ability to be embarrassed as well.
Mm. So do they present a challenge? Do you think people are attracted to them so that they can try and change them and make them want more than a one night stand?
I think there's a huge drive in people to be like, oh, well, I can fix him or her or them. But to me, actually, a big thing that's come up in my research is a lot of fuckboys are just alcoholics. So they drink too much and then they lie. And then they're like, well, but, you know, I was drunk. So I think that there's so much right now that's creating this like perfect storm. Like I said, there's more access than ever. You know, people want to have these sexual experiences and maybe they've like convinced themselves that they're comfortable with these just like brief sexual encounters, but they're really not. And then of course you have like this drinking party culture, which is obviously really fun and you can find people and connect with them sexually that way. But if that's not what you want, then I think, yeah, people need to also just be honest with themselves about, is this worth my time? Is this a project that I want to take on? Is this person even willing to change? I think that's a huge part of it. Cause a lot of these people that I've met with and talked to, they want to change when they hit their 30s. And by then it's really hard because you have a really long history and a lot of really bad habits.
What sort of habits?
Ghosting, lying, having sex with people with like no accountability. You know, it's just all these things that feed into each other, or just like, you know, leading people on. That's a huge one. And then freaking out when they want more than what you're giving them. But I was doing a show. I was just doing a stand-up show at the Bell House, which is a fabulous venue in Brooklyn. And I got a DM when one of the other comedians was on stage. I was hosting, and it said, "I'm here with my friend, and a guy who ghosted her last week is here in the audience. Should we confront him?" And they probably meant like, should we go up to them after the show? But I'd had a couple drinks, which I usually don't do at shows. So I went on stage and I was like, "I just got this DM. This guy needs to come on stage right now, and this girl as well, and her friend, for moral support." So we talked through it. Some people took pictures. This guy is just like, quote unquote, bad at communication. And some people posted it on Instagram and I reposted it. And I got so many DMs being like, "Oh my God, I matched with that guy on Hinge. He went on a date, we hooked up, and then he ghosted me and texted me a month later and said he's bad at communication." And so I was like, whoa, this is like a serial fuckboy. Like, he's really out there doing this. And, you know, after the show, he like tried to set me up with his sister. It was sort of a bizarre turn of events, but I hope he's doing better.
Wow. What an outcome.
Oh my God.
You know, I think it was really healing. He was there with another girl who turned out to be his sister, which I was very thankful for, because if he'd been there on a date, that would have obviously, I don't want to ever like embarrass or shame people. It's more just like, let's talk this through. Mm-hmm. And usually when I talk to these guys or girls or people, they do want to change, but they don't know how. They like can't expect more from themselves. And that to me is sad. And a lot of times they have an origin story. Their parents are divorced. They got cheated on. They don't have good relationship modeling. They, you know, have been single for so long. They don't know how to bring someone into their lives as a partner. It's like a lot of really deep things. That's what we usually find with when I, you know, do my show Drag His Ass. And these are usually people I've been talking to for weeks and preparing and getting to know, sort of like trying to peel back the layers and see like what's actually driving you to behave that way. And is it making you happy? And I think a lot of times what's sad is that it's not.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Drag His Ass there. So we're going to have to come on to that, because that is sort of the amalgamation of all this work and all the research. Yes. And stuff. And we've got to talk about that. But before we get there, it's so great having guests on like yourself, when you have someone who is such an expert in their field, because I've written here, you know, this was going to be a question for Mum, you know, what's the psychology of a fuckboy? But you've essentially just listed off all the things already. You know, you talked about the lack of positive role models, you know, a fear of intimacy. A couple of other things, Mum, would be interested in your thoughts on this as well, is, you know, seeking validation through sex and other people, stuff like that. Maybe a lack of emotional maturity. I've also written here, this is quite, we're talking A levels and beyond, avoidant attachment style. I mean, the psychology of fuckboys, what is going on there?
I do want to say I dropped out of college. I don't even have an associate's degree. So I'm not a licensed professional. I'm only just observing. So yeah. Kate, if you want to take that one, I mean, I have some more like qualitative information on that, but I'm curious. Yeah. The attachment style has really taken off as this sort of like scientific explanation for why people are bad.
Well, I mean, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because lots of people do find they have a problem with being too close. It's too threatening. And so they feel empowered by not getting too close. Mm-hmm. And they have fun. And a lot of people also feel very entitled, and they like being chased. And they, as you say, Diggs, they love the validation. So we have to assume that's what's going on. I mean, I think you've cracked it, really. But what interested me as well was that you said a lot of them want to change, which I find quite surprising, because, you know, I see an awful lot of people in relationships where they're still kind of behaving pretty badly.
Yeah.
Who don't want to change at all and don't see why they should, and make it everybody else's problem.
Yeah, I think to me, it comes down to self-awareness and communication. And there's obviously a really big divide between knowing you have something about yourself that you want to change and then actually changing it. And that's what I found through therapy, was like, I identified things I wanted to change about myself, but it took a really long time to actually like put those things into action. I feel like maybe, and I watched Couples Therapy on Showtime. I don't know if you've ever watched that, but it is a fabulous program. Maybe, maybe as a professional, you don't, you wouldn't agree, but I just thought it was really interesting to like see couples. And there was a lot of that, like people not wanting to change. Yeah. And they've been in those relationships for so long. They've sort of solidified themselves into their roles. But I think when people are single, like a lot of people do want to find companionship, but they're either waiting for the perfect person to come in and sweep them off their feet and make them want to change. Or there was one fuckboy that I worked with, and he was really fascinating because he could tell me exactly what his problem was. He fell in love with a girl and he really wanted to be with her, but he just could not commit. And he said, being single and chasing sex with women has become so intrinsic to my personality that I just can't give it up. Like, it's my driving force. It's why I go out on the weekends. It's why I post on social media. Like, he was so aware of it, but he needed to do the work to be able to like overcome that and realize that you have a lot more to offer than just sex, which is a great thing to offer if you're doing it respectfully, but he wasn't, and he was hurting himself and other people.
So how do you get people to change?
I mean, I only do work in a short time on the show, but I know some people that have been on the show who have texted me after saying, like, that guy, for example, messaged me a few months later and he was like, I just want to let you know that I broke things off with two people before sleeping with them because I knew it wasn't going anywhere. Like, I do, you know, and I'm not saying like changing the world one fuckboy at a time is the best way to do it. But I think you need to want to change. You know, if being on the show is part of that, then great. But I think we have fun on the show. We can make light of it. But there's a lot of darkness to it. And until people really make that active choice, they're just going to keep doing the same things.
So the show, Drag His Ass.
Yes.
How did it come about? And explain to me what it is, the process that happens.
Yeah. So I guess in 2019, I was sort of fed up with my own behavior, which was enabling fuckboys. Because I do think at some points I was a victim, but at other points I was enabling them. And I was sort of displaying fuckboy tendencies myself a little bit, which I really didn't like. Because you just get so desensitized. Like, it becomes normal to you to behave that way because if that's how you're treated. So I just made this decision that I was going to stop. And I bought this whiteboard and I was tracking my number of days fuckboy free. So my goal was to get to 100 days. And I relapsed a few times, but I was posting on social media and people were so supportive. And they were like, wow, this is great. Like, I wish I could do this. So I decided to do a live show where I just had other comedians come on and do sets about dating and sex and fuckboys. And then the second time I did the show, I just tried this thing called the Fuckboy Redemption, which is where I had a few comedians come on. They did sets. I did like an intro bit. And then at the end, the final segment was me working with a fuckboy who I had vetted and spoken with before, talked about their dating habits. And then I bring them on stage for this like structured interview where we, you know, like I said, we make light of what they've done. Nothing, you know, too serious. We don't want to bring the crowd down, but we do like talk about serious things. So the first one went great and it was a huge success and people loved it. So I kept doing it and I don't even know how many I've done at this point, but it's been a really rewarding experience. When I did it at Soho Theater, I did 5 shows in 1 week, 5 different fuckboys. And I will say I was really disheartened because you're just hearing people's worst behavior and it's like in this really concentrated time. So that was kind of sad, but it's all different people, different sexualities, different gender identities, and they know that they're bad. And like, these people usually come to me through either friends of friends or if I post on social media, hey, I need a fuckboy for this. In this city, there's always people. So I do get invested because I want people to be happy. And I think the show is really just like making light of something that's kind of sad and tragic, but also like, I think people in the audience feel really validated because they know that other people are also having these things done to them. So yeah, it's been quite the journey since 2019, but I love the show. It's like really special to me.
Mm. And this is probably a good time to say how we met.
Yes.
In Edinburgh.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be better if it is from your perspective, then, and it might be quite enlightening for people.
So I was in Edinburgh in 2022 doing my hour, and I, for some reason, agreed in that time to also do Drag His Ass two of the Saturdays that I was there. So I was doing my show every night, and then I did two Drag His Asses, or arses, I guess, osses, as you say.
Oh, yeah,
in
of course,
the UK.
Yeah.
So I knew I needed fuckboys, and I was like, it's a comedy festival. There's going to be people. So for the first one, I did a stand-up comedian who was great and a totally good sport. But I was told through a friend that there was this guy named Diggory who was hanging out at the Flick and that he might be a good candidate. And then I saw your jawline and I was like, well, I think he's perfect. So I don't even remember how I reached out to you, but you were so game and I hope you felt supported. It was, you know, it's just fun. Like it's, I know it sounds bad, but it's not a roast. It's more just like fun. And I mean, yeah, it was sold out. I think the girls had a great time.
I think so too. It was fascinating because it felt like we chatted for like half an hour in the Flick. And then you were like, I think you should be part of my show. That's all it took, talking to you for half an hour. And you were like, right, he's got to come on. And then, so you just asked me a few questions, like, you know, what's your dating history, like stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that in itself was enough for you to create, you know, I mean, you say it's not a roast. It's not a roast. It's a collective just understanding of who I was.
Yes.
But that show was fascinating because after the show, we had concluded that I was a fuckboy, but I was going to change. Immediately after the show, I got a DM from someone being like, just one more night. Let's sack off the redemption.
They always do that. You know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. Yeah. I can show them every bad thing about a person. Every single fuckboy I ever deemed has gotten DMs after being like, let's just hook up.
There you go.
I can't change everyone.
No. And it's just upsetting that there's some people that clearly aren't listening or watching properly or taking it in.
No.
Meanwhile, however, then I was at the bar downstairs and someone who saw the show came up to me and she was the other end of the spectrum and she just had a big go at me and said it was because, you know, I was a man. You know, I was entitled, things like that. It just felt like equilibrium was restored. The DM versus that, it was back to normal. And this shows how good the show is. I've been dating someone for 8 months. I haven't been going crazy. I haven't been doing anything. So if I was to be a fuckboy, which I'm not necessarily going to say I am on air, but it's done. It works.
You're cute.
Look, I want to write a reboot of the movie Hitch where I'm just helping guys be better. And I want people to find like love. I don't know. I'm a hopeless romantic. I think some people take the show as me being like, they think I'm just like cynical because they've never seen it. And they're just looking at the name and like my vibe as a comedian. And I am like obsessed with love. I'm obsessed with romance. I just want people to like, I don't know, just like be nice to each other. I really think that that's what it comes down to, unfortunately, or fortunately, could be an easy fix, but it's not. But I'm glad that you're in a happy, hopefully, relationship. That's fabulous.
Yeah. It's great. Aww. Yeah, exactly. So it's good for people to know that from a perspective of someone who came on the show, it works.
There's hope for everyone. I don't think anyone's truly even hopeless. Even Diggs. And you're so young. I even said on the show, I was like, you know, I worked with like a 65-year-old. I'm like,
whoa, what was that like?
Yeah. So it was my friend's dad.
Yeah.
And I was looking for people in New York. I was doing two shows in one night. And she was like, my dad is... he's a fuckboy. And she showed me his like dating profile. And I was like, you know what? This could be my toughest case. And I don't know how much I really got through to him. And honestly, older guys are way more brash and like not manageable. Even on stage, I was like, oh God, this is like going off the rails.
Oh, no.
But he sends me updates sometimes. And I think he's a good person. I really think like, if you get in those habits, no one's a lost cause, but the longer you do that, the harder it is to change. I mean, that's obvious.
Whoa. Mm. Having been here and there, do you think British fuckboys are worse than American fuckboys?
Oh.
You know what? It's from the people that I've met, it is equal. It is equally, it's in different ways, but... It's just bad everywhere. That's what I've learned. It's just bad everywhere.
No escape.
Mm-mm. And my heart goes out to everyone, as I say. I feel for people on both sides. Oh.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
We got some questions. I put it out to our followers on Instagram, and they sent in some questions because I said, you know, if you could learn anything about fuckboys and it be the truth, what would you
like
to know?
Well, I'll do my best. This is just one woman's opinion. But
you've got years of experience in the field. It's incredible stuff. So here's one. Do fuckboys know exactly what they're doing, or are some of them accidental fuckboys?
I think some of them are accidental fuckboys. I genuinely think some people are oblivious and they don't realize how their actions could be hurting people because it's just how they always behave. But I don't want to give every fuckboy an out. I think a lot of them know exactly what they're doing because they've had success in the past and they know what works. Since I got into a relationship, my approach is just accountability now. If someone makes you feel bad and someone treats you poorly, they might not know that they've hurt you. There's nothing to lose. You have to tell them. Like, it's so important to communicate these things. And I wish I'd done it more when I was single. But there have been a few instances, you know, my boyfriend and I have been open sometimes, closed sometimes. I had an instance with a guy where I just called him out. And he actually sent me a text like 6 months later thanking me, saying he doesn't drink anymore. He really took time to like look inward after what happened between us. And he was just like, I am so thankful that you said something. So I'm not saying it's our responsibility to fix people if they've hurt us. But I do think that you have nothing to lose if someone's already hurt you by just telling them what hurt you.
That's amazing. It's so true. And yeah, I think that's interesting that today that has kept coming up, the lack of accountability. So when you do say those things, if they go, yeah, whatever, or if they still ghost you or whatever, then they're a
you
total
did your
fuck
part.
Boy. Yeah, exactly. And you can just write them off as a complete dick. This is an interesting one. Do women actually like getting treated as a secondhand thing, or is it just FOMO?
No, I don't think that they do. I mean, I'm not exactly sure what the question means, but do they? I mean, no, I don't think anyone enjoys being treated poorly. I really don't. I think it's like we grin and bear it because vulnerability is so like taboo now. But no, that's crazy. I mean, I've never met someone that's been like, this is great. let's keep up this dynamic. No, I think people want to be treated with respect. And like, if you have sex with someone, I don't know. I'm like, obviously, like, it's fun to have casual sex, like I said, where people respect each other. But I think you should just, like, if you have sex with someone, you should just be nice to them. I don't know. That's my crazy hot take.
Whoa. Oh, my God. Well, we'll put that at the top of the show. So people
please
can be like,
do.
This is what's coming up.
Tune
and
in.
They'll be like, whoa, that's a hot take. What the hell? Yeah. Want to hear more of this crazy theories and stuff?
I'm insane. I'm a little crazy.
Okay, how about this? This last one. How to stop being attracted to fuckboys?
That's the age-old question. It's an active choice every day. I mean, I have my 6-step recovery program towards overcoming fuckboy addiction. And it starts with admitting that you have a problem.
Yeah.
You just got to demand better for yourself. And when you slip up, don't take a slip up as an opening to just keep doing bad stuff. Just because you had a slip up doesn't mean that all the progress you've made is undone. I just think it's like actively choosing people, partners, sexual partners who are going to make you feel good. And who you can just be honest with. There's a lot of red flags to me when people tell me about their like situationships or like people they're hooking up with. if you're scared to text them, you shouldn't have sex with them. If texting them gives you a stomachache, why would you have sex with them? That makes no sense. If you need to tell me your history with the person and it takes more than 3 minutes, more than two sentences, that is not a good situation. And I think the other thing is, like, you might think that they've hurt you the most that they can hurt you, so why not just keep having sex? They can always hurt you more. I justified stuff with myself a lot with that. Well, they've already screwed me over. They already ghosted me before. They already, you know, didn't text me back. So I'll just keep having sex with them because, you know, I already did it. So why not just keep? But no, that's not good. The more energy you give to that, the less you have to give to, like, things that bring you joy.
Yeah.
But people fall for flattery, don't they? They fall for the love bombing and think that it's for real.
I mean, love bombing is a whole other thing. It's definitely, and it's so intrinsic to what fuckboys do and how they operate. I think it's, unfortunately, love bombing has become one of those, like, therapy buzzwords that people just throw around. And it is a real problem. And I do think a lot of people know that they're doing it. They don't know the term necessarily, but they're like, I'm going to have this false vulnerability and, like, draw them in, and I'm going to give them so much attention. It's just like the blueprint. And then you have sex, and then where did all that go?
Yeah. I mean, at least fuckboys clear off. It's the ones that hang around negging that are the...
Oh my God. Don't even get me started on negging.
Have you been negged in the wild? If someone negs you,
oh my God. I actually texted a guy who negged me, and I was like, you were so mean to me last night, I never want to see you again.
Oh my God.
Was so caught off guard. He'd clearly never been told that he was negging. And I just think it's the laziest form of flirting. And if someone negs you, that is, like, no deal breaker. That, or you can try to coach them through it, but, like, if that's how you want to connect with people, by insulting them, no.
Yeah. No. Oh, great advice.
I hate it. It really, it makes my blood boil.
But there is a breed of person who responds. And so people will continue to do it. I mean, as particularly if you've been love bombed and then someone negs, they'll be absolutely reeled in and try to get the love back.
Break the cycle.
Yeah.
You gotta break the cycle. Read a book, read one book on it.
Yeah.
See if that helps. But I really feel for people. I think we're so starved of, like, attention and, like, connection that will sort of settle for bad stuff.
And I think there's definitely a feeling, even today, there's a feeling of needing to be in a relationship and to fight for it just because it has some sort of status. And it doesn't really, but people believe it does and feel that they're not good enough if they're rejected. And then if you're going to go for fuckboys, you're going to be rejected a lot.
Yeah. And it does definitely. It adds up.
Takes its toll.
Yeah.
Digs.
Sorry. Yeah. Well, listen, I went through the program. Yeah, exactly. This is a redemption story. This is a happy thing. We should all be hugging. No, I'm not having a go at me again. So I think that's it. Know your worth. Spot the signs. We've talked about them already, but maybe we can run through them again. So some of the behaviors. So obviously, the promiscuity, the having sex with lots of people, the player mentality, the inconsistent communication. Mm-hmm. You mentioned it there, Mum, the superficial charm, the flirting, the leading on. But then they're stringing on multiple partners, the emotional unavailability, whereas they may have shown it early doors, they've taken it away. This leads to this sort of egocentric arrogance, and then the manipulative and self-centered behavior, and all ending in, Mary Beth, the lack of accountability, which is a really important point that you mentioned. So how to deal with that, I guess, is if you listen to this now and you think you've done this, knowing your own worth is the main thing. And once you, I feel like once you know that, then you can start backing yourself and being like, I can see what's going on here. I need to believe myself and my impulses. This person is a fuckboy.
Yeah.
And you can try and steer clear. And if it's too late, then you should tell them. Hold them accountable. And if they still, like, say no or whatever, then that's on them. And you've done your job and you can be proud of yourself.
Yeah, you can walk away with your head held high. And I think people on both sides, it's really simple. Ask the question, is this making you happy? Is it making you happy?
Yeah.
Well, if people thought that, I'd be out of a job.
Yeah. No, they need to ask the question and then come to you and then they'll be fixed.
Yeah, it's such good advice because people don't think that. They don't think, is this making me happy? They think, this is what I've got to go for. I've got to pursue this.
This is what I should be doing.
This is what I ought to be doing. I need to be doing this. And they're not thinking at all about the quality of the relationship or whether they're enjoying it. None of that. It's just, I must do it. I must not be rejected.
Yeah. And I want to say too, like, I think promiscuity and having lots of sexual partners, there is an ethical way to do it. I read The Ethical Slut, of course.
Absolutely.
And if you're being upfront with everyone, you're being safe, you're using protection, all that stuff. It doesn't have to be like a one-to-one thing, but I just think so few people actually operate that way. And that's when it's really just collecting people to boost your ego. And then you just leave them high and dry.
Yeah, and they're people. I mean, if we can take so much away from this, but like, are they making you happy? Is this situation making you happy? Wow. It's
brilliant
so
advice.
Bloody good to have an expert on. I mean,
oh my God,
wait,
no, I'm going to get sued. The parliament's going to sue me for claiming to be an expert.
Yeah, you won't be back allowed in the country.
I am barred from the country. But yeah. It's just stuff I've observed and people tell me stuff. Like people like to tell me, they like to DM me about their relationships, looking for advice. I actually wrote an advice column during the pandemic for Paper Magazine. And I want to say, this is girl math. I'm making up this stat. 99% of my advice, talk to the person you're writing me a stranger about.
Yeah.
Talk to them. And if you're too scared to do that, then why are you, don't try to fix it. Just move on. It's like people, again, it's vulnerability. It's like people don't want to be vulnerable. They want the upper hand. There's this whole attitude of like, I need to win at this. I need to be the one that's winning. I'm not going to double text. I don't want to text first. I don't, you know, it's like, is that making you happy? And if you don't feel comfortable communicating with the person, you're never going to have a good relationship.
Yeah, no. Great advice. More great advice.
There we go.
Yeah.
Mary Beth, thank you so much for coming on. It's been an absolute
pleasure.
Thank you
for having me.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And, I hope everyone is happy and has a great holiday season. And if you hook up with someone from your hometown, just like have fun.
Yeah.
Just make sure they're making you happy.
Yes.
And if they're not, send them an angry text. Hold them accountable.
Please do. Please hold them accountable on Christmas Day.
Oh, my God. Oh, yes. That'd be a lovely little Christmas present for them. Oh, my God. Great piece of advice. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. And we'll see you next time on The Real Sex Education. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite and the executive producer is Claire Broughton. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast.
This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.